Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We are here with Sean Todd from Black Swamp Paranormal Society here in Ohio, who's going to spend a little bit of time telling us about him, what he does, his team, and so forth. Welcome, Sean. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Chris. How are you today?
Oh, can't complain. And I reckon if we tried here in Ohio, nobody listens anyway, right? So tell us a little bit about you. I know that you're fairly well-known here in Ohio around the paranormal groups. Of course, we're limited here. We have a handful of groups, but I hear a lot about you.
Well, I've been paranormal investigating since I started when I was about 7 years old. And I fired my team up when I was about 16. And I've been doing it ever since. So I've been around for quite a while now.
Now, do you just do it here in Ohio, or do you do it in the surrounding states and kind of go all over the place?
Anywhere I can get to. I was doing it while I was in the Navy. I did some investigating in Germany and Amsterdam and Mexico several times.
I apologize for the technical difficulties. It appears we have lost Sean, so we'll just kind of continue. I'll start a few early announcements. Here in Ohio, the Haunted Hoorah is coming up in Ashley, Ohio with Brent Stooksberry. Make sure that if you haven't had a chance to check out the wonderful little horror excitement that's there every year, jump in. It's a very low cost and a very fun thing to do. Marengo Flea Market will be running again this weekend, so make sure that you jump in and enjoy that. We've had some interesting conversations on RTP here quite recently, real-time paranormal that can be found on Facebook. One of them very, very interestingly jumped in over the metaphysical as well as several other things. So if you have a chance to jump in here to Facebook, look up real-time paranormal. It's got a wonderful bunch of admin. I founded the group myself, but I don't have a lot of time to spend on there. We will see some pretty interesting people like Carl Bland from time to time, Brian Parsons, and several other radio people jumping in, as well as some fairly well-known investigators that like to kind of voice their opinion and teach people along the way. So a little bit of basic news there. I'm not sure. It looks like we're still trying to get Sean running here, so I'll just kind of jump into a few things about the paranormal until we get him back, I suppose. I apologize for the inconvenience, listeners. I'm not sure what's going on.
Sean's
there. But
back.
Oh, here we go. Welcome,
we
Sean.
Back now. Like
we lost you there for a minute.
I must have lost my signal.
Yeah, it happens from time to time. Well, let's just jump straight back in here. You were telling us a little bit about the investigations that you've done. Let's talk about some of the places that you've been and a little bit of your teammates and how you go about things.
Well, I've switched it up many times over the years. One of my specialties, I love urban legends. Any haunted bridge, garage, road, woods, what have you, that I hear of within a couple hundred miles, I'm heading off to investigate it. I've always been fascinated with urban legends. I do residential as well. And then, I'll go out and do the big ones from time to time. To me, that's more like a trip to Disneyland than anything else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I've done the Ohio State Reformatory many, 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 many times. I used to work with the JCs, and I helped them run a haunted house out of there. The haunted attraction. So I got extra permission to get in as often as I needed. And that was a fun one. I always enjoyed that.
Well, the Ohio Reformatory has a lot of nooks and crannies in it that make it kind of fun. So I could see where you would enjoy that, especially if you had time to come back repetitively. I know I've been on two investigations myself there, and I do the tours every now and then when they open it back up. But it would be very interesting to go into that place and spend some real time.
It is. It is very much so. Very much so. I've done a couple all-nighters over there.
I could definitely
not to mention, running the haunted house, I was in there a lot, building the thing and working it and what have you.
Yeah, no, I can see that would be interesting. Have you ever done the asylum here? I think it's the Akron Asylum that's fairly well known.
I have not. No, I have not been to the Akron Asylum. I've been wanting to get to the one in what's the name of the town? Southern Ohio. They got a college there.
I'm not quite sure right off the bat.
Completely right now. I just read an article on it the other day. There's a college has a huge Halloween party down there every year. And I've been wanting to get in there, but I haven't gotten the chance to.
I know the Akron Asylum is actually quite interesting.
The asylums and the hospitals are my favorites. I love them.
Yeah, the Athens Lunatic Asylum is, I think, is that the one that you're talking about there in
the
ridges?
That's the one I'm talking about, yes, Athens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a unique place. I've had a chance to go there once. It's the environment makes it unique and interesting.
I've been by it many times, but I've never gotten the chance to get inside. It's just like a Trans-Allegheny is another one I've always wanted to get into, and I've driven by it probably 100 times, but never actually been inside.
Well, there's a lot of places here, though, that especially if you do residential, I'm sure you probably have dozens of stories that, like you're saying, haunted bridges and little nooks and crannies here in Ohio that are free to go to, and have an incredible story to them.
One of my very favorites, and it's fairly well known. It's Holcomb Road. It's called Holcomb Road. Is over by Bowling Green, Ohio. Uh-huh. And it was back in the 50s or so. It was a school bus with Boy Scouts on it that crashed. And the bus, burned. Everybody died. And the bus actually sat there. Like I said, this happened in the 50s. The bus sat there until I believe it was the mid-90s before they finally pulled that thing out. But that's one I get to two or three times a month. I'll tell you, that is one of the more active haunted woods I've ever been to in my life. I mean, it never fails to disappoint when you go out there. We see
what type of activity do you get from them?
There's a lot of the the little shadow people. I know a lot of people I'll refer to them as like imps. Maybe 2-3 foot tall with the bright red eyes. You see those little guys everywhere. And then the other one that people call the man in the hat. He's out there. He's a good I'd say 8-9 foot tall. And he generally, when you've been there too long, he'll step out of the woods just to let you know that, he's done and he's ready for you to go home, Though I'll tell you, one of my favorite events that occurred out there, and this has just been probably 2 or 3 months ago. This is a road, it's a very seldom used road. There's no houses on the road or anything. You've got the thick canopy of trees on either side. And so, of course, it's well known for, the young kids like to go out there and drink and what have you. So, inevitably, we're going to have an encounter with the sheriff anytime we're out there. And, when they find out what we're doing, they'll usually back off. And a lot of times they'll hang around and watch. But here just a couple of months ago, we were out there, and a young guy, I'm assuming he's a new guy in the forest. He couldn't have been maybe 24, 25 years old. He pulls up behind the car, and we've got all the equipment set up on the hood of the car, And he comes walking up, and he's playing Mr. Big Bad Police Officer. What are you boys doing out here? And we told him. He kind of laughs it off. And, so we're showing him the equipment. He's like, okay. And at that exact same moment, blood-curdling woman scream comes from the woods. Loudest one I've ever heard out there. And it was horrifying. I mean, it was a blood-curdling scream. This cop turned white, and he sidestepped and put his arm around me and his head on my shoulder, right? And he kind of stands there for a second, and he says, well, I think I'm just going to let you boys do what you do out here. And I said, well, a woman just screamed in the woods. Isn't that your job to check that out? I think you guys have probably got it under control. And then actually squealed his tires as he left. So the worst part, I had 4 recorders running, and not a one picked up that scream.
Huh.
I had 4 recorders running at the same time, and not a one of them.
Well, I was just speaking of that with Paul Browning last week. It seems like a lot of times when you're investigating and you're out there, you can get this equipment running, and for some reason, though you experience it, other people can experience it, and you know it's there, it just doesn't get caught.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we had one not too long ago. There's a it's a bike path. It's not too far from my house. That's you know, way back through the woods and along a river. And I guess it's about 15 years ago, a girl was raped and murdered out there. And that's one of our, you know, when we're bored, we're going to go out there and investigate if we don't have anything else going on. You know, I can walk there in about 10 minutes. And we had, once again, probably four recorders going. And one of the recorders picked up just an amazing EVP. And it was about four sentences long. And not a one of the other recorders touched it. You know, and all the recorders were sitting within probably 3-4 foot of each other. And I mean, I've gone through the video, I've gone through every one of the recorders, and it was one recorder that picked it up.
And that's strange how you'd think that all of them would pick it up, you know, because that's just the way audio works. Sound travels, they should all get it. But it's ironic, right? How you can do that and only one recorder pick up something where the rest don't.
And you know, I've run into situations where every recorder will pick it up.
Uh-huh.
We a couple of years ago, there's a woman here in town that does a haunted ghost walk, right? And I won't mention the name because, you know, she's kind of on the crooked side. But what she does, she's an author here in town that writes about the history of Tiffin. And what she'll do is she'll just take people on a walk past, you know, houses that are supposedly haunted and tell the story and move on, and charges $50 a piece to do it. Well, we went along, you know, and the next night we decided, well, you know, I want to go back and check a few of these places out. Now, the one, it was a train station back in the 1800s, huge, huge building, right? And apparently it was a train station, it was a brothel, there was a restaurant, a barber shop, and a hotel, and so on and so forth in it, you know. And we decided, well, we're just going to park in the driveway, you know, and run the spirit box for a while, see what we pick up. And so we're sitting there, and this guy comes walking up. You know, what you guys doing? And I told him. Well, he turns out to be the owner, right? He says, well, you want to go inside? Well, heck yes, we want to go inside, you know. So he took us in, he gave us a tour of the place, and then I set it up for the following weekend. He gave us a full 24 hours to investigate. And I'll tell you, this is absolutely heartbreaking. The guy who was my tech manager at the time, he had stored everything on a external hard drive on his computer, and then lost the hard drive. We lost everything. But I'm talking, I mean, we had to have had at least 40 or 50 EVPs, okay? And these were getting picked up on every recorder and every camera we were running. You know, when we went back and listened, you could hear it on every single thing going. You know, I even had recorders. There was an upstairs and a downstairs. I had recorders upstairs that picked up the exact same things. That was an amazing building to get into, and they're renovating it now, and he's not letting anybody else back in. I would love to get back into the place. But he was telling me stories how he had hired, I think, five different construction crews that left after about 2-3 days, you know, because of the activity going on in the place.
That's an interesting story. You know, Delaware, Ohio is similar to that. They have a lot of haunts around the area, and some of the buildings aren't as well known. But it's really kind of fun to find those little holes, those little nooks and crannies.
Oh, it is, and, yes. Before they start charging and it starts turning into a tourist attraction, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of Delaware, Ohio. They don't like to do that. They're kind of sticklers on that situation. They like to avoid the whole haunted thing. They'll let investigators go into areas, but they don't like to publicize it. I think that's kind of cool.
I worked for the Dodge dealer down there for a couple of years. It definitely wasn't something that was glorified, you know.
No, they have an incredible haunted history in that whole county area, but they don't like to cover it. In fact, one of their more notorious areas that was down by the dog pound that was an old hospital asylum and rest home for a little while. They tore that down because too many people were sneaking into it.
Exactly. And, you know, I don't condone that, but I won't say I didn't do it in the past. You know what I'm saying? You know, in my younger days. Well, I mean, you figure, you know, when we were younger, it wasn't as easy to get into these places, you know? I mean, ghost hunting wasn't as, you know, popular as it is now, you know? And most people, when you talk to them about it, thought you were crazy and sent you on your way.
Uh-huh.
I used to live in Kentucky, and a group of guys one night that I worked with, they're like, oh, we know this place. It's absolutely amazing. We got to take you. And it was at Waverly Hills, you know? And this is before Waverly Hills, I think Waverly Hills made their mark when they were on, was it I want to say Scariest Places on Earth. But before that, you had to park, crawl under a fence, and walk a good half mile to get there, you know? And I'll tell you, Waverly was something else back then. You know, I mean, one of the most imposing buildings I've ever walked into in my life.
Well, it still is when you actually visit it. If you've never been to a large haunted location, when you walk up to Waverly, you just kind of, you're amazed at looking at the building. You're like, whoa, this is just massively phenomenal.
It is. I mean, it's definitely one of my favorite locations. I do love doing Waverly. I haven't been there in a few years, but
of course I say that about the haunted reformatory here in Ohio too, because it's such a beautiful building. And when you're first coming up to it and you look at the building and the outside and the setting, and you're just looking at it going, man, this is just so massively large and wonderful, you know there's something there.
Exactly. That was the Ohio State Reformatory was the first time I was ever actually lifted off the ground and thrown against a wall.
Really?
Yeah, that was fun. I had a couple of buddies with me, and we were the used to be a holding cell. They got it full of toilets now.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I think they call it the toilet room, if I'm not mistaken. But we were in there, and these guys are filming the toilets, you know. And I come up off the ground a good 2 foot, went backwards about 3 foot, and slammed into the bars and came down.
You know, that's ironic because that's the only place in the reformatory I actually got a bruise on my back from something that literally just smacked right into me in the same location.
Right. I had the bruise around my throat. You know, I hit the ground. They turned around. They said, what happened? I said, well, only about the coolest thing in the world while you were filming toilets. You know? But, that was the first time I was actually picked up and thrown. That one, you know, and the best part, being a paranormal investigator, most people have been horrified. I'm waiting for it to happen again, you know?
Yeah, it is kind of amazing when you've searched your whole life, and I don't do investigation. I tag along with investigators like you because I like to tell your stories, observe, learn from you.
Right.
I mean, you've been doing it for years. But it is amazing how you search your whole life, and some people will run scared just going, no, 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 no. But when you've been looking your whole life and something happens, you stand back up and go, is that all you got? Come on, I want to see more.
Exactly. You know, I mean, I've had two times where I was probably flat terrified, you know what I mean, to the point of, you know, losing control. First time would have been my first trip to Waverly. And that one actually wasn't even paranormal related. You know, we found the death chute, and I wanted to go down. The other guys didn't. You know, I had a small handheld with an IR, you know, so I just had my little LED screen. Well, I'm going to go down this thing, you know. I'm about three quarters of the way back the tunnel. You know, it goes back so far, and then you got the iron gate there that goes outside. And I stepped on a live possum. And I'll tell you what, you know, absolutely terrified me. That stuff they tell you about possums playing possum when they're scared. No, they don't. You know, those eyes turn red, they hiss and scream. Oh, I thought I was going to die down there.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a creepy enough place to go walking through in the first place, but then you run across some sort of wild animal or something, and it can be very startling, I could imagine. I was in Helltown And you know Helltown. It's not really an extremely haunted place, but it is still creepy when you're walking around that place.
Very much so, yes.
And it took us 2 weeks to get permission, and then we were out walking around the town, and I managed to go through the edge of the woods by myself. And I had a similar situation with a raccoon, believe it or not. Raccoons generally aren't very aggressive, but he didn't have anywhere to go. And here he starts squealing and squalling, and you look into his eyes, and you kind of see this kind of glare, and it freaks you out.
you corner them, and they can get a little scary.
Yep, most definitely.
They definitely can.
Now, let's get into a little bit of the technical investigation. Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off there. No, you're perfectly fine. Let's get into the more technical end of investigation. And we've had some unique questions come up, and I had one come up on Messenger from a fellow investigator that's in California, actually, right now. And he was curious on how certain things happen. Now, listeners may not know this, but when you're an investigator and you have a team, you have specific things that you have to do according to state and federal standards. One of them is you have to have insurance policies in place for your own safety and for the safety of the members when you go into residential. There's also a couple other legal contracts that have to be filled out and so forth. Since he's kind of jumping back into it with his team, California doesn't offer policies the way they used to. And he was curious because this is the first time they're doing residential. They've done commercial for a while, and it's really easy to get as you know, I'm sure. The listeners may not, but it's really easy to get a commercial policy just to cover yourself for one night.
Exactly, yeah.
But let's ask an investigator that has done this for years. When you're doing residential – now, I know from a business standpoint, because I've worked in a lot of different businesses, you pretty much set up a policy that's generalized for a business standpoint that covers you. But do you do the same thing when you have a full paranormal team? You go out, do a business policy that pretty much covers damages and so forth.
Yeah, I do. And then I've also got a notarized form that I did up myself that stops, you know, any responsibility to the homeowner. You know what I mean? I guarantee that, you know, if one of us falls down the stairs or out a window, we're not going to sue them for it, you know.
Well, I think it's very important to do, and people have to be comfortable with you coming into the home, especially since a lot of investigations are not going to be like you see on TV that are only going to be, I'm going to be in here for 3 hours. We'll have all your answers.
Right. Exactly. I've always told people that the ghost hunting's a lot like fishing. You know, you may sit there all night and not get a thing. You know, and then again, you might fill the cooler in the next 10 minutes. You never know.
Well, and I actually had somebody ask quite recently, and I gave a personal opinion on it. And this is just a personal opinion, so everybody knows. But I've spent a lot of time behind the scenes in marketing and business. I had somebody ask, and let's see what your opinion is on this, because I'm sure you're going to agree, because they're two different ball games. A lot of people say, why doesn't television cover more residential? Now, my answer was, there's a lot more legalities involved there.
There are, yes.
I've
run into a lot on residential. That you know, they'll tell me beforehand they don't want pictures posted, they don't want it talked about, you know, just in case they decide to sell later down the road, you know. Of course, myself, you know, I mean, I would that would be a big selling point for me. You know, the house is haunted. Well, I'll pay another $10,000 for that. but a lot of people are touchy about that.
Well, these days things are starting to change. People would do that.
I do get a lot of them that want it all kept confidential when I do it.
I can certainly imagine, and that's a good point to actually bring up. That's why I figured I'd bring it up to an investigator that's out there all the time. It is a very touchy subject. You know, if you're living in a small community, especially here in Ohio, even though ghost hunting and the paranormal is more likely to be accepted now than it ever has been because of television, when you're in that small community, people talk.
And
the moment they do, you end up being a seed that can't change.
Exactly. Now, I've spent quite a few years living in a little town called, I don't know if you ever heard of Republic, Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Republic's a tiny little town, you know, and there's a little town about 5 miles away called Bloomville. And I was managing a pizza place there in Republic. Word got out that I was a paranormal investigator. And I was labeled a devil worshiper. You know, I still can't go into that town without getting dirty looks, you know?
It happens a lot. And then if you add that on to property values and so forth, the moment the reputation goes out, if somebody's looking at your home, it can be a pretty scary thing. Because, you know, the community knows what's going on. Even me and my small little radio show, I'm in a very small town in Ohio, but I'm well known across Ohio now. And I got a lot of supporters because I've been here for over 45 years. So once people realized, okay, Chris is coming out about the paranormal, let's listen. It's still, you get the looks.
Oh, you do. Yeah, you do. And I mean, the town I'm in, Tiffin, we have, there are two other, paranormal investigation teams here. They're one of these groups. It's a group of older women, and they charge something like $300-$400 to do investigations, you know, and that's something I'm totally against. And then, the other one was a group of guys that, the only thing they ever investigated was a cemetery outside of town. And then they finally broke up here a couple months ago. And, myself, I like to spread it out. You know what I mean? I do a lot of it for, you know, I do it for the science. I do it for the, you know, the helping people, but I do a lot of it for the thrill value too. You know, I'm one of those guys. I've always, you know, loved being scared, you know, and I'm not one to run, you know, from something scary, mainly because my knees are bad and I can't, you know, but we discovered a cemetery not too long ago. And it absolutely amazes me. Do you know where Bettsville, Ohio is?
Uh-huh. Yep.
There's a quarry over there. What is it? Basic. The Basic quarry is over there. And there's this little, you know, kind of like road that goes back through the trees, and it's got one of those, you know, gates in front of it. You know, there was never any no trespassing signs there or anything. But, you know, we walked back there one night to see what was going on, and way back in the back, there is a cemetery that's got to be 5 acres. I mean, it's a monster. And it's beautiful, you know. I mean, it's well-maintained. It's well taken care of. There's no newer stones there, you know. I mean, nobody's been buried there in years. And there's no other entrance to it than about a 3-foot-wide path through the trees. You know, and I mean, we found this. We're like, wow, you know, isn't this something? And so we started doing a little investigating back there, and we had checked with Basic. They didn't know who owned it, you know. And then, the last time we were out there, a sheriff pulls up, and we get out to the sheriff, and he says, well, didn't you guys see the no trespassing signs? And I said, we've been out here a dozen times. We haven't seen any no trespassing signs. He shines his light up on a tree. He says, well, that one there, as a matter of fact, it kind of looks like it was probably hung up today, doesn't it? And then somebody apparently has bought it, but we haven't been able to find out who yet. Huh. Cemeteries is another favorite of mine. I love investigating cemeteries.
Now, when you do cemeteries, do you get a lot of activity? It's kind of a hands-up thing. Here in the United States, people are always saying, you don't. But now when I spoke to investigators overseas in Japan and China, some areas of the UK and so forth, they do it all the time, and they swear they get activity, they get voices, they get the whole nine yards.
We do too. There's a cemetery. It's you know where Fostoria, Ohio is?
Yes.
613 running out of Fostoria, Ohio, going west. There's a little bitty cemetery. It's on a little side road. Goes to there used to be a big factory called Atlas, and Atlas had a park out there. Little side road goes to the Atlas Park, and there was this little cemetery there. And I'll tell you what, you didn't even have to go in this cemetery. All you had to do is pull up out front. And any given night of the week, there were at least 10 to 15 apparitions walking around this cemetery. Every single night. I mean, there were ones that would walk around a stone and kneel every time they came to the front. There was a group back in the corner that appeared to be children playing tag. You know, there was ones that would go straight up in the air and come straight back down, you know. And I took many friends out there, and they're like, oh, you know, you're crazy. And I, you know, got out there, and then just, you know, they were absolutely floored. The cemetery was amazing. And I went out there, I guess it's been about 6 months ago, and somebody built a house right up against the back of the cemetery, and it's got floodlights shining on it now. And it seems like all the activity has stopped. You know, I didn't see a thing the last time I was out there.
That's probably the reason the floodlights are there.
Probably. Probably.
Got woke up too many times in the middle of the night and decided they wanted to put the floodlights out there because they thought something else, somebody else that was alive was probably running around, and this way nobody... You know, you brought up a very good point a little bit earlier, so I'm going to bring this into the conversation a little bit, and that is investigations and paying for an investigation. Now, when I state this, listeners and everybody that's out there, don't think that I'm against somebody charging for services, because I'm not. However, there are a few lines of questions when you're dealing with situations, especially when you're dealing with a subject like the paranormal. The reason being, the paranormal is in question in the first place. So a lot of investigators feel free to help residential areas and people in their homes without charging for a reason.
Right.
Now, let's get your opinion on that. I know what my opinion is, but let's get your opinion on what the reasoning is on why we shouldn't charge for a situation like this as opposed to charging $300 or $400 to come to a home.
See, now, in my opinion, you know, if I'm asked to investigate a home, first of all, you know, the person's obviously looking for help, right? Second of all, I'm doing something that I'm completely passionate about. You know what I mean? I mean, that would be like Cedar Point calling me and saying, hey, we'll pay you $100, come spend the day here. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's, you know, to me, that it's I'm constantly looking for places to investigate. You know, and I'm looking for proof. You know, I want proof. I want, you know, pictures. I want, you know, EVPs, the whole bit. So any chance I get, you know, I'm not going to charge somebody to do it. You know, I mean, I won't turn down, you know, if somebody wants to offer me cookies or a glass of lemonade or something like that, you know. But I've always been against charging for a paranormal investigation. I had a girl call me a couple years ago. Was living in a house trailer. It was her and her mom and her three daughters. Then I mean, she called me in tears. You know, I mean, her place was haunted, and it was, you know, she was just having a heck of a time. And she lived down in Florida. So I put the word out, you know, over Facebook. You know, somebody in Florida, you know, can maybe stop in and help this family. And some guy jumps right in. Oh, yeah, I'll do it, no problem. Well, she calls me like 2 hours later. The guy wanted $700 to come to her house and do the investigation. You know, and yeah, you know, this was a situation where there were children involved that were terrified. You know, now I can understand. Oh, you know, maybe if it's an expensive hotel, you know, and it's running guests off or something like that. Myself, I wouldn't charge for that, but I can understand people charging for that. You know, but especially residential investigations, I'm very against charging for.
Well, and here's the thing: as paranormal investigators, some people have done this from scratch. Some people have taken schooling, and some people have done other things. There are ways to make money without charging for the services that you're doing as an investigator. You can do shows. You can do educational group get-togethers. You can do presentations. When Halloween comes up, a lot of people do events all over the place. They get paid to speak. They get paid to educate. They can set up booths. You know, there's dozens of different ways to make money as a paranormal investigator, not including sponsors and so forth, to get out into the homes. So if you think about it, and again, I'm not trying to offend any investigators that charge. I understand why you're doing it. You have to make your bills. You have to – And if you're doing this full time, you have to be able to pay for the equipment and the time and so forth. But if you think about it, when somebody comes for help and they can't eat, does a food pantry charge them for food? The answer is no. If somebody comes to a church because they want faith, and again, not to bring up faith, everybody has their own beliefs and religions, and that's perfectly fine. But if you go to a church for faith and you want to be baptized, does the preacher charge you to baptize you? The answer is no. Paranormal investigation is the same, guys. If somebody asks you for your help and they're afraid and you know you can come in and come up with a logical solution or possibly have the answers with experienced people, why charge them for it?
Exactly, yes.
You know, and like you said, it's different if it's a big place.
I have no problem with, you know, with a lot of the bigger places that want to charge for you to investigate. You know, like I said, to me, that's all I like going to Disneyland, you know, especially the ones that the money goes to the upkeep, you know, that goes to keep the place running. You know, I'm all for that. Some of them are getting a little out of hand. I hear Waverly's up to, what is it, it's $100 a person, minimum of 10 people.
Yeah,
that's
give or
$1,000 a night, you know.
The reformatory is pretty high, too, but they've been doing it for years.
At last I heard the reformatory, I think it was $50 a person, minimum of 10.
It's actually went up. The last time I checked, it was right around $150. Now, the minimum is still at 10, but they prefer that if you're doing larger groups, you go into their group sessions and group and get speakers and so forth. Then's when it gets really expensive.
Right.
You know, the last one that we set up professionally with some of the big names, I think it ran about $3,000 for the weekend. But again, you also had to set up places for them to sign autographs and do their little speaker thing and so forth. So,
right. And I mean, the other thing as far as, you know, raising money for the team, because, you know, there are expenses. You know, you've got equipment, you know, travel, so on and so forth. I spent many, many years with JC's. And it's nothing to run a fundraiser. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
You know, whether it's a car wash, whether it's a haunted house, whatever. You know, I mean, it doesn't take anything to set something up like that up, and you can make the money you need that way. You know, I've set up thousands of fundraisers in my day. You know, and it's not that hard a thing to do. You know.
Yeah, and it toes the line. The reason that I ask that is because it toes the line a lot of times. Paranormal investigation is a questionable thing anyway. It's not like going out and removing insects from your home or pests from your home or redoing the electrical in your home. You're literally going into an environment where at one point – now, that has changed a little bit, but at one point, roughly about 97% of the United States of America didn't believe that it was there and thought it was a joke and nonsense that you played on Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, and now it's getting a little bit more acceptable. We're down to about the 60%. 60% don't believe. 40% are just loving it because of the fear.
Right, exactly.
But – nevertheless, when you're running into something that has been notorious to have mentalists in it, has been notorious to have fakers in it, has been notorious to take people's money, the moment you start taking people's money, you become a question too.
Exactly. You know, like I said, I started my team when I was 16, and it was not easy, you know, back then. I mean, you know, you got laughed out of a lot of places, you know. A lot of places.
Well, I still see a lot of people that do get laughed out, especially when you start talking about psychic mediums. And again, I'm not attacking the term medium. I've met some people that are very extraordinary. They've done some things I can't explain.
Right.
I've met a few shady ones, too. That's just a part of the field when you're dealing with the paranormal.
it is.
But,
it gives a bad name to the rest of us, you know.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think that's in every field, though. I mean, look at sales and marketing. There's some wonderful people that I've met throughout the years that have led me on a great career. They're brilliant people. They do speaking all across the United States. And then you've got the Zig Ziglars that you know that they're giving you a line of crap a mile thick and charging people $150 to $500 a ticket.
Exactly. I spent many, many years in direct marketing. And, there's all kinds out there, you know, all kinds out there. You know, what I always loved, I worked for a direct marketing, telemarketing company. And every once in a while, they'd hire some new guy. Boy, they found this guy on the street. He's one of the best there is. And when I was younger, you know, I went through a lot of the sales circus, working for the really shady telemarketing companies, the vacuum cleaner sales, that kind of thing. And this little boy walk in his suit, and he'd see me right off the bat. And the first thing he'd do is he'd pull me to the side, and he'd say, "You tell these people one word about who I am, and I will see you fired today." You know? I ran into a lot of them.
Well, it happens in the telemarketing industry. I started very early on in telemarketing before I developed my voice and my personality and my careers that I have today. In fact, I was your stocks and bonds boy. People still kind of laugh about that. But once upon a time, right. Penny stocks were legal if you did it right.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yep, I wasn't on the phones long, you know, and then I went into training after that. And when I first started training, that was before a lot of the telemarketing rules came into play. Uh-huh. And, I can create some sharks out of a group of 30, 40 people, you know.
The funny thing is a lot of those original starters that created Dial America Marketing and a half a dozen other companies and made billions of dollars, they taught people back then things that most people have forgotten today, like feel, felt, found, and all these other things that
right.
And how to relate with the customer. Now it's all 100% scripted related. Now, I know this is off key. We'll get back into the paranormal, everybody, but the bottom line is for grandfathers like myself that have been in marketing and probably Sean and a half a dozen other people, we don't deal with the person that's a script. Hello, may I speak to? Nope, bye, click.
Exactly. I was not a fan when it went to the scripted stuff. You know, not a fan at all. The last telemarketing job I had, technically telemarketing, it was a customer service for AT&T. And that was much more conversational. You know, it was a lot easier to train people to do, and it was a lot easier to sound like a real person, you know.
Well, getting back into the paranormal a little bit, let's start talking about some of the other interesting situations that a lot of people experience and get your opinion on it. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because this is a common thing that's mentioned in the state of Ohio, believe it or not, is poltergeist activity. It seems like everywhere you go in some of the more well-known locations, they love to use the word poltergeist.
They do. You know, I think it gets thrown around a little too much, but, you know, I agree.
So how often have you actually seen any type of poltergeist activity on your investigations throughout the years?
You know, I mean, what I would consider full-blown poltergeist would be probably one. And that was a guy that was he was with me at the reformatory when we had the night I got picked up slammed against the bars. We went home that night, and he called me probably not a half an hour before he got home or before after he got home, and he's like, get over here right now. I get over to this guy's house, and it was like nothing I'd ever seen. I mean, the cupboard doors were slamming, the walls or the doors were swinging back and forth, dishes were flying out of the cupboards. It was crazy, and it was something he picked up there at the reformatory. And I tried, you know what I mean. I've always had fairly good luck with cleansings and what have you, but there wasn't a chance. I wound up, and I'll be darned if I can remember the lady's name, but I got a hold of a lady and her husband out of Cincinnati, who they actually showed up the next morning, and they cleaned it out. But afterwards, she tells me, she says, now, is there a road with an abandoned barn close to here, brick house on the side? I said, yes. She says, don't ever drive down that road again, because that's where he went. And I haven't. that's been a good 15 years ago, and I have not been by that house since then. But, yeah, I've seen stuff picked up and thrown, you know what I mean? I've seen things knocked over, that kind of thing. But to me, when you're talking true poltergeist activity, it's more than it's more than somebody picking up a screw and tossing it across the room. It's a lot more. I watched a gurney sail across the room one time at there at Waverly. And once again, not something I would consider poltergeist.
That's just when people explain that, I like to explain it as that's just something acting out slightly. You have a picture fall off the wall or something get thrown at your head or something fly in the air. It's just telling you it's there.
Exactly.
But you are right. Serious poltergeist activity being a person that actually went through it for a short period in time, you will see doors open and slam, and not just one door, all of them.
Exactly.
Windows open and close. You might see cabinets open up and everything fly out of it. And I know that this sounds absurd and ridiculous, guys, but it does happen. I've seen it. I was a part of it. I know what happens. You'll see the most unusual things that go beyond somebody just wanting to tell you they're there.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And so many people, I'll get so many doubters that'll be questioning me. And, what I always tell them is I have seen too much not to believe. I've been seeing it my entire life, Now, that's what got me into, in paranormal investigation in the first place, And then, like I said, I've been doing it ever since. I used to get in trouble constantly. I grew up on a farm. And, at one end of the farm, there was an abandoned house just on the other side of our field. There was a cemetery on the other side of that house, and then there was an old abandoned barn back behind our woods. And I would sneak out with a tape recorder and an old Polaroid, load up the horse, and head out there. Mom and Dad would find me a couple hours later, and I'd get in trouble. But it happened a lot, It happened a lot.
Polaroids and old cameras are a good thing to actually bring up. Digital cameras pick up a lot of things that are very controversial called orbs, which most of us know are 99% of the time dust and other anomalies. But ironically, when you were using old Polaroids and we were using older cameras, you didn't pick up a lot of that because the digital wasn't focusing on it. Now, Polaroids did have their own little glitches. Because of the flash. But nevertheless, sometimes you could pick up images on that. You can't explain off as easy.
Always had a lot of luck with the Polaroids, and it's just so hard to find Polaroid film anymore,
It is. Yeah, definitely. I like the older cameras. I like the older video cameras, too, the VHS cameras as opposed to a digital camera. If I can go into a location with an old-fashioned camera and a VHS tape, I love it.
I agree. Yep, I agree. Right, mine
the problem becoming you
go,
can't transfer it over that easy anymore.
No, it is. It's getting harder to do and harder to find people that will do it for you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I had the VHS where you used the smaller VHS tape and then you plugged it into a bigger one to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
That was my baby for many, many years. And about 6 months ago, she quit working.
SVHS, I do believe that's what it was. Super VHS,
yeah.
Smaller tape.
Yep.
Yeah, making it more portable. We used to use those a lot when we were out in video shoots, then dub them back over with a little bit of software and a few other things. Took a lot more to edit back then than it does now, though.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Anymore, I ran into some bad luck a few years ago. I made an ill-fated move to New York that didn't turn out well. And I put everything I owned into a storage unit and came home, and then a buddy of mine was going to drive back up there with me a week later. And a storage unit broke into and cleaned completely out. I lost every piece of equipment I had. I've been slowly rebuilding. I do a lot of... Oh, the spirit box. I love my spirit box. Absolutely love my SB7. I do a lot of SB7. I do a lot of EVP work, I've kind of been playing around with the Echo Box, but I just haven't gotten the hang of it yet,
I'm a little bit of a questionable one when it comes to the spirit box, as I'm sure and a lot of people know, because I worked in audio for so many years, so I can reproduce a lot of things. I'm more of the old school EVP. If you're going to go into situations like that, a lot of times what I tell people is the overhand audio that you're listening to, the scanning of the words back and forth, the things along those lines, granted you're going to get a response. But if you play all of that through back again, and under all of that, you're picking up a conversation that shouldn't be there. That's the thing you should listen to. Now, just so everybody knows, real EVP science has picking that up, which is why people try to continue to use spirit boxes now. It's just very commonly misconceived that those over words, when you're saying hello and you're getting names and you're asking situations and you're getting things that could respond, you're saying, gee, that's a ghost.
Right, yeah. You're looking for the longer responses, you know?
Yeah. Responses and things,
full sentences, that kind of thing,
and things in between that. Hidden responses are really key. It's kind of like the old-fashioned white noise when you had a television on. If you're listening through all the static and somebody's talking to you, all of a sudden it shouldn't be there. Well, the same thing between broadcast signals does qualify in a sense. If you're going, "Hi, my name is Chris. Is there anybody here?" You're going to get names and so forth. And you continue with simple questions like, can you hear me? Do you have anything to say? Well, you're going to get those answers. But if you listen close enough all the way in the middle of that and you get a full conversation that goes, hello, hello, my name is Sarah. I can hear you. Can you hear me? Right. I'm in your house. I'm seeing you right now. Then
exactly.
You're going,
yep.
Okay. And that has happened from time to time if you do your EVP research, listeners, and you actually look into the paranormal when all of this started. There have been researchers that continued to do that and even put it in a Faraday cage and carried on conversations.
Right.
So that's just kind of interesting things. Well, I know that we're getting down to the winding minutes of the show. So, Sean, tell us how we can find you.
Well, I've got a page on Facebook, Black Swamp Paranormal. I try to keep it up to date. I've been kind of slack in the last couple of months. I've been, kind of going through some personal stuff. But I'm getting her back up there, Getting it back up there. I've also got a Black Swamp Paranormal Instagram as well. Haven't gotten as far as putting together a website yet because I lost my computer. But yeah, I do keep up on my Black Swamp Paranormal page as well as my Instagram page, and of course my Facebook page as well.
And just so everybody knows, if Sean is available, he may stop into the Marengo Flea Market. We're planning on, if everything works out right. Excuse me, everybody. I've got a bit of a cough tonight, but we're planning, if everything works out right, to have a few investigators stop in and discuss how paranormal investigation works the week before Halloween. There may even be a live investigation that you can tune into on RTP Facebook group, where we're going to be streaming some live video while we're investigating in the old school. The old school itself is not well known to have a lot of activity, contrary to where some people have looked into research and created stories on. However, there is a janitor that's very well known. He spent most of his life in the school, and it was pretty much his whole situation. I mean, he absolutely loved the school. That's all he did. He loved the children, and it is believed that he's there. So our goal this Halloween is to introduce you to investigators like Sean when they pop in to say hi and talk a little bit and maybe even show a couple of pieces of equipment. And at the end of the day, me and several other investigators are going to go into the school for a brief period of time and broadcast live on Facebook and see if we can get the janitor to say hi.
That'd be awesome, right? I've been talking to my team about that, and we may just be able to make it down.
Well, we'd love to have you, definitely. You've been talking with Paranormal Truth and Reality. We've got a local investigator, Sean Todd. He's been talking about some of the things that he's experienced here in the state of Ohio and surrounding areas with his many years of investigation techniques and so forth. Next week, if everything works out, we're going to have Tyler Scott on with Tyler Paranormal, or Paranormal Tyler, rather. He does some very unique videos across YouTube and several other areas. He's been fairly well known throughout the paranormal community for several years now. He's a very unique individual, so I encourage you to actually jump in and listen and ask him questions. As usual, if you ever have any questions or just want to talk to us live, I broadcast the 800 number over my Facebook page personally and all the advertisement. Feel free to call in live here at BBS Radio and support Donald and his other shows, because it's a wonderful station that's been working very well with us. Sean, do you have anything you want to tell the listeners before we go?
Well, no, that's really about it. I mean, if anybody in the local area, Northwest Ohio, needs any help, get a hold of me on Facebook, and we'll be there.
Well, there you go. And it's always good to support the local investigators like Sean and all the other people that are out there. We'll have plenty of those coming here in the next 2 to 3 weeks, as well as throughout Paranormal Truth and Reality. It's been a wonder having you, Sean. You're always welcome to come back, tell us your stories, pop in, or if you're not busy, call the 800 number in the middle of things and start a conversation with one of the other investigators. We'd love to have you.
Sounds great. I thank you very much for having me.
That's not a problem at all. Well, with that said, we will jump off of here. You've been listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston. We've been interviewing and talking with a discussion with Sean Todd, a local Ohio investigator. And I will close you with this, as we do every single week. Remember, in the paranormal, when you really think about it, truth should always be the reality. We'll see you next week and have a very good weekend.